Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Speakers are asked to refrain from abusive or profane remarks, disruptive outbursts.
See, that's the problem. Your forked tongue gets you in trouble. Just like,
no, it does not.
If you don't know who I am, close your mouth. Something's going to fly in your mouth.
You're going to have to be quiet when I'm talking. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the insubordination.
This is not transparent, open government.
I have never said you were psychotic, though you may be.
I don't know that I care for the narrative.
Well, Stephen, I certainly didn't mean to hurt your feelings or anybody else's, or to imply that any one of us is not doing what...
I'm not a maiden who needs to be saved from my feelings.
Wonderful, thank you.
Love can touch us one time and last for a lifetime.
Without a ban, the doors stay open. Without a ban, the doors stay open. Without a ban, NDAs get signed behind closed doors, which is already happened. We want to be protected in Escambia County. That means a ban. Not a pause, not a study, a ban. Walton County did it. They listened to residents and passed a ban to protect their water, their power grid, and their quality of life.
Tonight you will hear plenty of facts about water, power, and all manner of disturbances caused by data centers. But regretfully, so many of you only care about what isn't it for you. Well, I don't have any money to throw at your campaigns like your big wig elite friends. What I do have is an appeal to your hearts and souls if they have not become as poisoned as you'd allow our waters to be.
Well, there's nothing like completely insulting somebody to their face to get them to do what you want politically. So I don't know how many of you actually watched the open forum for Escambia County last Wednesday. I just did over the weekend, and oh my God. I knew it had been a lot of people showing up, and I had watched just a little bit of it while the meeting was actually happening, but wow. Okay, so I'll give names as we go along. Sarah Pepper and Misha Phillips were the two speakers there, and trust me when I say I have picked for you the highlights, or the lowlights, whatever you might want to describe it as, of what could have been a really short public forum. Could have been. Because they were there to talk about a thing that does not exist and is not happening, and to persuade the commission to do something that they are not going to do anyway. And even if they did, then the political question of whether it would actually be good for us, well, I think I disagree with these folks, but, you know, apparently I'm going to be the only one. That's fine. I don't mind. Lumen May, after about 10 minutes, 15 minutes worth of this, Lumen May, Commissioner May, said, well, y'all are here and y'all upset about data centers, which, again, we're not actually building, which is not an issue. It's not on the agenda. They wanted a ban on data centers ever coming here, even though they're not coming here. But, okay, Lumen says...
So let's be clear for me. I don't support data centers, and so we know where my vote is going to be.
So, you know, they love that. He's opposed to Netflix and Google and Facebook and Instagram and posting videos of county commission meetings, I guess. Because, I mean, those are the things that use data centers. But we'll get to that later. Anyway, so Lumen says again.
Has there been an effort or a commit that we are supporting data centers? I mean,
not that I'm aware of.
Okay, yeah,
we haven't discussed it together, but not that I'm aware of.
I thought this was your idea, Lumen. Wasn't data centers your idea?
Yeah, it's my idea. It's my idea of the property tax reduction from Tallahassee. Oh yeah, all the Republican ideas are my ideas. Yeah, I mean, I'm welcome to listen. But I always don't like wasting people's time. I mean, just from my position, I'm never going to vote for a data center. I mean, on the record.
All right, so he's one against on a subject that, again, is basically a myth. Ashley Hoffberger.
So, and to answer your question, no, I don't think any of us are advocating for this. I don't think any of us are negotiating Florida West's change.
Let's hold a vote. Ban it. Ban it in the county. Hold a vote and ban it.
I'm so sorry. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say, if all of you are opposed to a data center, then stand with your community and Escambia County as a whole, considering the majority is against it, and ban it right now.
Yeah! Well, there is a thing called the Florida Sunshine Law that says that if you're going to have a vote on a subject, that you're supposed to notify people in advance that you're going to have the vote on the subject so that you can do, what's that thing? Hear both sides. That's the idea. Instead of showing up en masse to try to yell and scream and interrupt other people when they disagree with you and shout down the opposition by extraordinarily hyperbolic statements. But yeah, you know, nobody's pushing this. And then somebody gets someone, well, then ban it tonight. Well, you can't ban it tonight, but what you can do is schedule a meeting so that you could have a discussion about creating an ordinance that would either restrict or put a moratorium or, you know, put more guardrails on than the state has put, or, you know, outright ban. That's a possibility. Lumen May again after continued yelling by the crowd.
So you guys probably can't hear the discussion.
You know, ban it and burn her sound very similar when you say it out loud. Ban it! Burn her! She's a witch! Data centers are witches! They turn the data center into a newt. I got better. Anyway, sorry.
So, you guys probably can't hear the discussion.
Madam Chair, I would be, Madam Counsel, can we add that to the agenda to ban data centers?
Not for...
There is a legal obligation. Not for tonight.
There are steps that you would have to take to do a moratorium.
Yeah, I mean, you can go through a process, especially because the Tallahassee has both already put in rules about data centers and also put in rules about local governments restricting land use. So you got to make sure that you're doing whatever you're going to do within the boundaries of the law, both of which have changed substantially in the last year. So Allison Rogers wants to make sure she's, you know, the county attorney. She wants to make sure you do it right.
We can look at scheduling a public hearing, but you can't just do a moratorium without an ordinance.
So can, I mean, Madam Chair, can we put that on the agenda to move forward? I mean, I think the community has clearly spoken. I mean, can we put that on the agenda?
No. One viewpoint in the community has clearly spoken because they got all worked up about what they thought was happening in the county and isn't, and they decided to come down en masse and protest, and that's not even remotely the same as hearing what the community believes. That's hearing one very loud group of people give their opinion. And that's fine. I mean, that's no objection. It's thrilling to see democracy in action. I wish it were better informed, but, you know, that's always my concern.
Thank you, Commissioner May. In light of that, we will still allow everyone to speak if you would like. If you would like to hold those comments until the next public meeting, you're able to do that. If you want to hold your sign and wave in support, you can also do that as well. But out of respect for everyone who has shown up tonight, we will still give you the opportunity to speak.
Yeah, so what Lumen had proposed is let's have a discussion at the end of the agenda, a discussion you can always add. Let's have a hearing later on. Let's talk about an ordinance that would ban or put a moratorium. And, you know, words do matter, but, you know, either way, accomplish some kind of an end result. And everybody seemed to be basically on board with that process. And so Ashley says, hey, you know, she's the commission chair. She says, hey, you know, you guys can talk since you're here if you want to, or we could just quit and move on to other business. What do you think they did, John? They quit 15, 20 minutes in and decided to save everybody an hour and a half of life? Or did they?
Nope.
No, we are all going to talk. And talk they did.
oh, boy.
And, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, man, I could have saved myself a lot of time and effort and work cutting this audio because I didn't even remotely cut all of it. I do have 50 clips. I mean,
50 clips.
I go overboard. I'm a hoarder. What can I say? Anyway, it just you know it's true. I mean, you know it's true. And they get progressively more and more interesting, as typically is the case. So they could have, you know, just stepped aside, but they didn't. And I'm torn because, you know, like, would have saved me a lot of time, but it also wouldn't have had all this good show prep. And I think this is a conversation the community ought to have. And so far, we have not had a conversation. We've had a monologue. I mean, you know, 60 different speakers, but, or whatever, 50, 40, I don't know, hike, whatever, speakers. But there was one or two sort of on the other side. Not real strong light because they got booed and yelled at when they talk. Which, if you want to persuade me that your side is right, shouting and yelling and screaming and saying incendiary things and exaggerating and attacking the commissioners and disparaging people's motives and failing to address basic, obvious, contrary questions, which they failed to address, basic, obvious, contrary questions, and heckling people when they disagree with you, that does not persuade me. In fact, if anything, that counter-persuades me. That kind of behavior makes me want to believe the other side. Because that's how mobs act. Usually stupid mobs. And it's not, that in and of itself doesn't make you wrong. But just, I'm speaking for me. If you behave like a mob, you make me assume you're wrong. It doesn't actually mean you're wrong. I know enough logic and I've taught it enough to know that the anti-bandwagon view is also not true. But when you bandwagon and heckle and all of the things, that not all of them did, but enough of them, you make me kind of inclined to think that you don't know what you're talking about. Not fully enough. Now, after having listened very carefully, done my own research, I do generally believe that they don't know what they're talking about. And I think that the commissioners pretty much got bullied. The commissioners might also believe, but based on some of the things they said, I'm not sure they're well-informed either. And we're just not really having the conversation we should have. So here I am doing a radio show. We're going to have this conversation. We're going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Okay. The woman who wrote the change petition, change.org, that's got, or at least had about 5,000 signatures at the time to ban data centers in Escambia County.
Sound and light pollutions are also a concern.
Her name is Brandi Johnson.
A constant, never-ending torture for residents that live near these monstrosities. The most alarming of all these concerns is residents that live near data centers believe they are giving them cancer. Also, there are reports that animals living near data centers are having stillborn babies. What do you think that would do to our children? If data centers were great, half the country wouldn't be fighting them.
Well, let's not assume that the half of the country that is fighting them is super well-informed, because it could also be that they're showing up en masse based on a view of these things that they see shared on social media, which, John, just a quick check, if you see it on social media, the underlying digital footprint of that video or that post is stored where?
In a data center.
Interesting. Okay, so if you're sharing emails and posts and videos and posters and motivational phrases to oppose data centers, you're sharing and copying and storing them where, John?
In a data center.
In a data center. Okay, I just want to be sure.
Okay, me too.
It's sometimes hard to figure out how people who are using data centers are also completely against data centers. Okay. I taught logic for 10 years. I was amazed that nobody even bothered to address that. That literally, very basic questions like, do you use this product? No, nobody uses it. It's just the wealthy fat cat millionaires that are trying to ruin our air and our water and our land and destroy our way of life and give our kids cancer and make our animals infertile. Those are the ones who use data centers. Interesting. So these wealthy, malicious billionaires got wealthy by doing what? Oh, well, you know, like inventing things and selling them to people to make their lives better. Well, okay, so the billionaires are investing all of this money in something that people don't want. That's right, we don't want data centers. Why are they investing all of this money in this stuff? Well, I mean, some people use them, I guess. Also not addressed. You know, these repeated claims that these evil, wealthy billionaires are investing in these things that nobody wants. Which, John, do billionaires get wealthier by investing in things that people actually don't use?
No.
No, they get wealthy by investing in things that people
actually
use. So you might not want a data center in Escambia County, but you want the benefits that data centers in general bring based on Netflix and YouTube and Instagram and your research. And as you're reading your talking points off of your phone that, I don't know, sounded in some cases like maybe AI helped you generate. And you use GPS to drive to the county commission meeting, and you use the Escambia County website in order to find out when the meeting was. And you like, What do you think a data center does? It stores information that you use. It's a computer room. There are small ones. There are big ones. And again, just to be clear, in case you're tuning in late, there's not one coming here. This is nonsense. This is fake news. Steve Stroberger, bless his heart, answered a question poorly about how Florida West, our economic development agency, had responded to a request for information from a company that sort of was halfway curious about what would be involved in putting a small-scale data center somewhere in Cantonment. And then we have 150 people show up at the county commission meeting, all misguided and, again, worried about the light pollution, which, okay, fair enough. I'm not sure how light pollution is an issue, but, okay, I mean, it's a fair question. Noise pollution, fair question. Heat produced by these things, will they consume water? Well, the new ones typically don't consume water. They use a water closed loop system that doesn't actually evaporate water off. That's a different question. How about power? Oh, no, they definitely suck massive amounts of power. But do they take it from the grid or do they bring their own? What does the Florida state law require? Bring your own. Do they actually increase resiliency for the grid because the kind of grid that they need to operate or be connected to is actually going to be better and more stable than the one we currently have? Is it possible that they would actually lower energy costs for the rest of us? Do they generate property taxes, which might actually fund a government that's about to get gutted by a November proposition that would benefit us all but also take away a massive amount of money for the government? I mean, again, you know, if you're going to use social media, if you're going to use YouTube, if you're going to use AI, if you're going to email and, you know, all the things, well, where do you want these things to be? Well, I wouldn't want it in my neighborhood. Oh, my God, the NIMBYism was right out in the open, even by the commissioners. Well, okay, I don't want a landfill in my neighborhood either. But that doesn't mean I don't want a landfill somewhere. You know, I don't want the wastewater recycling plant next to my house, but I do want it somewhere. And we have, you know, remote areas that are not next to people that we can use for all kinds of things. Never answered. So many basic questions never answered. And just in case you're wondering, I'm not so much for them, but I'm for an honest conversation. And we did not have one last week at all. It was a completely one-sided conversation with lots of misinformation and errors and not very much on the other side, which is what I always believe in, talking about both sides. So am I in favor of a hyperscale data center in Escambia County? I don't know. I'm open to it, but I want to talk about it more. That's all. I'm Andrew McKay.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft.
Oh no.
That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Save up to 30% with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
ADX Digital Lead, Brian Prowitz.
As a business owner, you want less to worry about. You want proven, simple concepts and tools that just do what they said they will do, and proof that those tools work. Well, that's ADX Digital. Simple digital concepts that move the needle for your business. Reporting that proves the results and market-leading customer service. And that's what we do.
No one does digital like ADX Digital Marketing. ADXDigitalMarketing.com.
Why'd I go to the doctor? Working on the farm, my heart kept skipping a beat. I didn't think much of it, but my daughters made me get checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Pensacola's hurricane coverage headquarters is News Radio 92.3. With wall-to-wall coverage before, during, and after storms.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
Like a Blade Runner reference in an AI discussion, data centers. Somebody says, if the Board of County Commissioners had any guts, they would ask, how many of you looked anything up on the internet today? Yes. Somebody else says, so AI data centers would mean less social media and less AI. I'm good. Vote them down. I like that. Actually, that's funny. Somebody else says, but data centers are going to eat your children to death. I saw the meme. Oh, man. I just bring an honest conversation. That's all I ask for. Hey, if you're thinking about that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a good quality selection of used cars. Cars that are a year, two, 3 years young, low miles, great condition. They warranty everything to 100,000 miles or 10 years. They'll take care of you. They only go out to buy good quality cars. That's why you don't have to worry about it. And, you know, they'll always provide you with a Carfax with every, you know, there's a the price sheet comes with the Carfax attached to the back. And you can haggle about that bottom line price if you want, you know, no problem. But the Carfax will tell you the vehicle maintenance and automotive history, repair history of that car if it's been reported. And, you know, if you go to somebody else, like you do something on Facebook Marketplace and they don't give you a Carfax, go to Frontier. They'll give you one for free. Literally to help you buy a car from somebody else, just to make sure you get information. Now, I recommend you get a used vehicle inspection if you're going to buy somebody else's car. At Frontier, it's worth the money, by the way. If you buy from Frontier, they'll warranty to 10 years or 100,000 miles. It's all included. So you know the car is going to be great. And they will certainly work with you if there's any issue. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for 29 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop. Britain will soon have a new leader. Prime Minister Keir Starmer reveals his decision earlier, saying he informed King Charles. Starmer's Labour Party won in a landslide less than 2 years ago. Now he becomes a caretaker into a new leader. The Labour Party is chosen. Major progress in Switzerland in the peace talks between the U.S. and mediators from Iran and other nations. Vice President J.D. Vance is there.
Can we turn over a new leaf? Can we change relations in the Middle East permanently? Or do we go back to doing things the old way?
A U.S. diplomat involved in the talks told Fox News some of the discussion was focused on clarifying the confusing messaging on the Strait of Hormuz to ensure it will remain open, adding that robust discussions on all elements of the nuclear deal are ongoing.
Fox's Trey Yinks in Tel Aviv. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got 81 degrees. It is mostly cloudy at the moment. We'll get a look at our forecast from Channel 3. That's up in just a few minutes. Well, recent flooding has set back a major bridge replacement project in North Escambia County, a temporary asphalt road providing access to a construction bypass bridge on O.C. Phillips Road, southwest of Walnut Hill. Reportedly washed away during the recent heavy rain. Construction on the $5 million permanent bridge replacement began in February, and that's not expected to wrap up until around summer of 2027. There's no word yet on when the temporary bridge will reopen or how that washout will affect the project timeline. Well, a sudden stop on I-10 in Escambia County yesterday morning caused a tractor trailer's load to shift and then spill onto the road. The Florida Highway Patrol says the driver, a Kissimmee person, stopped abruptly near mile marker 10 to avoid a collision, sending his cargo to the westbound inside lane, leaving the truck unable to move. There were no injuries reported in that crash. And of our bicyclist, seriously hurt after being hit by two vehicles on Highway 98 in Santa Rosa County yesterday. The Florida Highway Patrol says a Jeep SUV turned right onto Prado Street without yielding to the bicyclist riding in the adjacent bike lane. That sent the rider into the path of a truck that was stopped at the intersection. The bicyclist was hit by both of those vehicles. The drivers of the Jeep and the pickup truck were not hurt. An investigation into the crash is ongoing. The intersection of Massachusetts Avenue and W Street in Pensacola will be closed today and tomorrow for additional roadway repairs after a recent water main break. No through traffic will be allowed at the intersection during that time. Detours will be in place. Repairs are expected to wrap up by late tomorrow afternoon. Of course, that is weather permitting. Well, a Crestview school bus driver facing DUI and child neglect charges after backing a school bus into another vehicle while six kids were on board. Crestview police say that 62-year-old Michelle Provoznik was driving an Okaloosa County School District bus on Friday when she hit a stopped vehicle near 8th Avenue and Fairden Boulevard. Officers say they smelled alcohol and conducted field sobriety tests, which did indicate impairment. Her breath test showed a blood alcohol content of 0.048. Provoznik was charged with DUI and 6 counts of child neglect. No injuries were reported in that crash. Florida Senator Rick Scott is praising the outcome of Colombia's presidential election. Scott congratulated Abelardo D. Espriella on his victory, saying it's a great day for Colombia and for freedom-loving nations across the hemisphere. Scott said he is confident the relationship between the U.S. and Colombia will now be stronger than ever under De La Espriella's leadership. It is 5:34 here at News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast with meteorologist Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at a nice warm day today. Temperatures around 90 degrees for your high. 10% chance of a stray shower. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. Going into Tuesday, 30% chance of a stray shower. High near 88 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Going into Wednesday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high near 88 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Cloudy and 81 degrees. Your next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Paul Murray with your money now. SK Hynix this morning has overtaken Samsung Electronics to become South Korea's most valuable listed company, marking a dramatic reversal of fortunes for a chipmaker that 2 decades ago nearly collapsed under debt. SK Hynix has emerged as one of the biggest beneficiaries of the global AI boom, propelling a more than 340% rally in its shares this year. China's Commerce Ministry has placed 10 American industrial suppliers on its export control list. The Finance Ministry excluded 46 U.S. companies from participating in government procurement projects. The move comes after the Pentagon earlier this month added several Chinese technology companies to a list of entities it believes have aided Beijing's military. Companies including Nestle and IKEA are urging governments to make electrification central to their economic strategies to help reduce exposure to volatile fossil fuel costs and bolster energy security. The group also included Volvo Cars, Uber, and more. Futures are slightly lower this morning. That's your money now.
Did you know? Florida West Economic Development Alliance partners with local and state stakeholders to compete for companies that are considering Escambia County, the city of Pensacola, and the town of Century. These jobs, wages, and investment deliver real returns for our residents. These outcomes strengthen Escambia County's economy and protect taxpayer interests through disciplined, results-driven economic development. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Woo! Summer's heating up and we're smoking at Sonny's. Our new summer menu is hot and your favorite barbecue bowls, they're back. How about our new cherry cola pork burnt ends, some brisket mac and cheese or slider trio, and finish your meal off with some cherry cobbler egg rolls. With 4 locations in the News Radio area, we look forward to slathering you with Southern hospitality. If it's smoking out back, it's Sonny's out front. Don't forget to download your Sonny's barbecue app for sizzling summer deals and rewards. And remember, it's always Sonny's here.
Hi, this is David Williams. I'm seeking re-election to the Escambia County School Board in District 3. I worked for 35 years in the school system, where I've made a difference in students' lives, where I help increase the graduation rate, making sure our schools are safe, and ensuring our students are college and career ready. Please visit my webpage at davidwilliams3.com and view my platform for District 3. Re-elect David Williams, Escambia School Board.
Paid political ad by David Williams for Escambia County School Board District 3.
This is a statement from the National Weather Service.
September 2020. The National Hurricane Center predicted Hurricane Sally would come ashore in Mississippi.
A hurricane warning has now been issued.
But then, Sally made a right turn and surprised us by coming ashore here with a destructive power we have not seen since Hurricane Ivan, which is why you should keep your radio on News Radio 92.3 for all the latest watches, warnings, and full team coverage should the storm make that unexpected change of course. News Radio 92.3.
Her name was Lola, she was a showgirl, with yellow feathers in her hair, and a dress cut down her ass, she would merengue, and do the cha-cha, and while she tried to be a star, Tony always tended bar across the crowded floor, they worked from 8 till 9.
Speaking of controversial issues, why not? The appointed versus elected superintendent. Tell me what your position is, and tell me which election should this referendum be held at. I know it was made to be at the primary election. Do you agree with that decision? But what's your position on elected versus appointed, and which election should it have been held at?
So a question that I posed to Scambia candidates for school board, particularly in districts 1, 2, and 3, they're up for election. This was a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it was not me doing my radio show from inside a sofa, although it does sound a little bit like that. You know, this is one of the big issues in Escambia County is whether we're going to go back to having an elected or whether we're going to stick with an appointed, whether people are going to protest against the fact that this was pushed into the primary, I think, for political reasons, inappropriately, immorally, by primarily Kevin Adams and Paul Fetsko, and I always forget the District 5 representative, so I don't want to say a name and get it wrong, but David Williams is on the other side of that vote along with Chris Bergosh, but they lost. Anyway, so David Williams is going to answer the question.
Lance Samuels on the general...
District 3, by the way.
Lance Samuels on the general election, 61% of the voters voted. It was during the general and won by 890 votes. I've been fortunate enough to work on the both. I worked on the elected. We had some great elected. And I'm on the school board. I work with an appointed. Right now, I prefer an appointed because now I have the authority to evaluate that person. And with an elected, you're there for 4 years. And so I believe it should have been on the, and I voted for it to be on the general after it was voted down by the school board. But I'm open to elected or appointed. I'm okay either way.
Yeah, I actually have said this many times, but in case you're new to the show, I'm of the opinion that, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other, each has different advantages and disadvantages. I see it both ways. I see the city of Pensacola has an elected mayor, as, you know, that works very well for the city. I see the county commission has an appointed, you know, county administrator, so does Santa Rosa County. Works better and worse at some times, just like mayor works better and worse at some times. It, you know, it's largely a style preference. Even though I know, you know, good friend John Peacock would disagree with me vehemently about that. We need somebody who is elected countywide. And, you know, I don't disagree with the reasoning there. I do think that it's probably overblown the amount of sway you can have over an elected countywide official. But, yeah, I just think my objection is not so much to the question itself, although I think we ought to give it 10 years. I think it's premature to be re-asking the question of the voters. I just hate the fact that it was put in the primary. Particularly for political purposes. And you'll notice Paul Fetsko and Kevin Adams not really answering that slice of the question, which is part of the reason I wanted to ask it, because they were so big on pushing it for the primary. This is Paul Fetsko.
I agree with what David said in that I've worked under both. And it's not how somebody gets in that office. It's what they do once they're in that office.
Okay, but then why did you vote for it? Why did you vote to ask the voters again? And which he's going to answer, by the way. But, you know, why did you specifically put it at the primary, which was the most contentious part of this issue?
Having the ability to remove somebody before 4 years has been something that I've seen as a positive. I promised my constituents and a lot of family members, extended family members, that if it came forward, that I would vote to have it go on. And that's why I did that. At this point, I really don't have... I'm not determined that it has to be one way or another. It needs to be what the voters want. No one should give up their right to vote. And I'm saying go ahead, get it over with because of the timing in order to get it if we have to go back to an elected again.
So kind of a weak argument at the end that, well, the sooner we know, the more we can adapt to it. Well, if you don't want to take away anybody's right to vote, then you want to put it to general. So disappointed in that, not surprised, but disappointed. Aaron Toller, who's running against Kevin Adams in District 1.
I'm in favor of an appointed superintendent, and this absolutely should be on the general election ballot. The turnout in a primary is too low. If you're saying, well, the margin was so narrow last time, we want to revisit it, then why are we pushing down the pool of voters? If we want to put this back on the ballot, that's fine. I have no problem with that, but it should be on the November election, and unfortunately, that's not where we are. The reason I favor an appointed...
By the way, agree with both of those. Exactly right.
The reason I favor an appointed is simple. If you don't know this, Florida's weird because our school districts cover entire counties instead of, like, you know, half a dozen schools.
Yes.
So the superintendent is overseeing, what, 67 schools? Is that the number? 60 schools, so lots of facilities. That's that is more than a full-time job. I don't want someone in the school board who has to spend half their term running for office the next time. And I don't want just the most charismatic person into that position either. I want to go through a thorough selection process and the elected officials, folks up here, ones who are making that selection.
You know, this is another excellent point. Aaron's very smart. You know, former teacher or possibly current teacher. It wasn't clear to me entirely. I think former teacher, but any case. The size of our school districts is, insane. I mean, it's insane. John, you've lived a lot of other places outside of Florida, at least right. Some anyway. In Texas, I mean, is Texas like us or is it like?
No.
Okay, how many schools are in a district in Texas, in a school district in Texas?
I mean, just going by what Arlington does, there's like 10 or... But there's three different types of things I know in Tarrant County alone.
Okay. And that's the way it is elsewhere. I mean, you know, as I recall from Illinois, from even Oregon, from Arizona, this notion of having 60 schools in a school district, you know, 330,000 people for one school district is insane. Just put aside the number of people, just geographically, it's crazy to have a superintendent whose job is, 50 miles north to south in Escambia County, something like that? That's crazy. We should have smaller school districts. We don't. We have, you know, the school board is contiguous with the county, and that's nuts. I mean, I even think our counties are too big, you know, just for reasonable management of a thing. The one place where I see our county working pretty well, in both counties, frankly, is the sheriff's department. Seems to work pretty well. But even there, you run into issues. I mean, look at the beach versus the mainland in Escambia County and all the trouble that the sheriff has to go through to handle that. I mean, it's not a big deal, but, you know, I've said many times, if you're new to the show, that if you were to set out to redraw the county boundaries in Escambia and Santa Rosa County, you would definitely not draw them the way they exist today. You would draw, you know, either you'd probably draw like Perdido might be a county and Santa Rosa Island would be a county. And then, you know, the peninsula south of the Yellow River would be a county. I mean, if you think about interests and values and economic activity and number of people, I mean, you just wouldn't draw it the way it's drawn. And you might draw basically everything north of I-10 in both counties to be one county joined across the current state line or across the current county lines. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think that she's right, that the size of our counties makes for a really problematic situation. And probably having this large of a county with so many different schools means that an appointed superintendent is a little bit better of a fit. Because then you have the question, well, what should we do with the county commission? Should we have a mayoral style, which we'd have to do a referendum. We'd have to do a lot of things to make that happen. It's not the standard under the Constitution. Because you kind of have to answer both questions the same way, right? And given that the budget are at least comparable for the county and the school district, you should probably answer this question the same way for both. You know, whether we broke them up, which we can't do, not really. I mean, if you had a bunch of incorporations, maybe you could. But, you know, it would make more sense to have them be a lot smaller. But we don't have that option in front of us, just like we don't have the option of a general election for the elected in front of us. Kevin Adams also going to give an answer on this. Remember, he's one of the key people who has been advocating for returning to an elected and having a vote and having it at the primary instead of at the general.
I had the opportunity to have a couple of different superintendents. Michael Thomas, first one elected. Dr. Tim Smith was our first appointed. Saw a lot of politics in him getting appointed to that job. Shouldn't have been done. And now we got one that's fairly doing a good job. That's Keith Leonard. The reason I support an elected is that governor can remove that superintendent. Okay? If not, you got to wait till you get three board members that decide to terminate that appointed superintendent.
So we would rather have a system where the governor can remove your executive at will? That's better? Not clear why that makes sense, but okay, all right.
So if you look down at Broward, Governor DeSantis had to remove three board members, maybe three to four board members, to get enough of the board members in to terminate that superintendent that should have been terminated in the first place. So I trust the voters, and I trust the governor more than I do having this appointed system. But if it fails in this primary, then I'll work with whatever the citizens decide, I'm good with it.
And I do hear a theme in Kevin Adams, and let me play out the argument the best I can. He says that at least you can get rid of the superintendent fast if need be. The governor can come in and use his authority. Because presumably the superintendent is so bad that they should be removed, but not so bad that the school board is willing to do it. Okay, well, how about the same thing for school board members? Which, you know, they can be removed too by the governor, but why would the governor be the one to have to do it? Why not have recall elections? Remember when we were talking about putting the school, the superintendent issue on the ballot and when to put it on, I said if we're going to do, you know, mid-term kinds of things, then why not do that for everything? Let's have the, you know, every other year we can have elections and recall elections. I mean, there is a certain point at which you say, well, we have four-year terms for a reason, so we have a kind of stability, and the voters get to have a say, as opposed to the governor having a say. Well, the voters get to have a say through the school board, too, if they wanted to remove a superintendent. You might say that, you know, if a superintendent is bad and they're appointed, then the school board can act quickly, whereas the voters have to hope and pray for Tallahassee or wait 4 years for their election. I can see, you know, rapidity arguments or, you know, fast arguments on both sides. So, anyway, not a particularly satisfying conversation to me, not really addressing the issues that I wanted to have addressed, but, you know, still at least worth having you here. Those are your candidates that are running for the school district right now. 550 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need a roof or you need a repair or you don't know what you need and you just want to ask questions of somebody who will, you know, take your interest seriously and talk to you like a person, you know, not talk to you like you're supposed to already know all of these things and not, you know, treat you like you're dumb for not knowing and just talk to you like a human. Quality Roofing Solutions. 20 years they've been in business since 2006. Brian Ward, he and his company have put in, you know, 10,000 roofs in this area and they have a 4.9 rating on Google. What more do you want to know? I mean, seriously, like that, you know, for me, if I'm listening, I hear that. I'm like, okay, I'll add them to my list. Now, you might talk to other roofers, too. I mean, get a couple of quotes. That's fine. And you might, you know, discover what somebody who's a good friend of mine discovered. She had a couple of people come in and look at them. Quality Roofing Solutions is one of them. She says they weren't the cheapest, okay? I mean, they were close, but they weren't necessarily the lowest bottom price. They certainly weren't the most expensive. She went with them, though, because she kind of read about who, what they do and how they treat you and their reviews. And she's like, man, they did what they're supposed to do. I'm super satisfied. Like three or four anyway, other people on her street have since gotten roofed because of that. So she's been great advertising for them. But my point is, they're just there to be the people that you want contractors to be. That's it. It's very simple. They have a 10-year warranty for the workmanship on all their roofs. Who does that? Well, they do. Okay. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services. Advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
You're not looking for an argument.
You just want to know what's going on.
And that's a good thing.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Please, sir, I want some more.
What?
Please, sir, I want some more.
More?
You know, one of the things I love about that is people misquote that all the time, including myself, as people will quote it as, I'd like another, or I'd, you know, and not quite exactly right, but, you know, you get the gist of it, I suppose. 5:54 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. Man, storms, was yesterday, not in St. Louis per se, but sort of east and north of there throughout Illinois, and that storm has now moved over basically northeastern Ohio and western Pennsylvania and New York, and there's another round, but it's not coming quite in the same path. It looks like it might go south of St. Louis, south of 70, and this one is all over Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma is blanketed with severe thunderstorms right now in north Arkansas and all the way over into even Nashville. So if thou beest going northwards, as if I don't know why you're driving your car with old English, but anyway, if you're going that way, go around, sir. Go, you know, or wait. I mean, something, because it's going to be rough. I don't know. It's the weird things that capture my brain's attention on a Monday morning. 5:54 on News Radio 92.3. Roger Scott Pool is going to be open this summer after all. Looks like we're going to get some kind of a temporary restroom facility in there after all the drama around it not being open. And I'm guessing that parents have been screaming at DC, what are you doing? Get us an open pool. So we'll see. Open in time for the 4th of July, according to Tanya Bird. She's the Parks and Rec director. Jim Little and the PNJ have a good article about that. So they're going to have something. Remember, this is the ongoing saga of, like, it was going to be $1 million to put in a bathroom, and all of the city council's like, can't spend $1 million for a bathroom. Well, then what are you going to do? You know, construction is expensive. It just is, you know. This is the same problem to a degree. This is the same problem that we're running into at Veterans Memorial Park. It's not quite the same, but, you know, it's in the same genre. Just open swim hours. I guess no programs is the takeaway from that. This is just an odd note, or, you know, kind of a sad note, I guess. It's a name I had never heard before, and I always like to learn things that I did not know. But we've got a passing of a television giant. And again, I feel, I guess, a little bit dumb that I didn't know the name. But do you know the name James Burrows in TV connection, John? Is that a name that rings any bells with you? He died at 85, a Hollywood director. He directed over 1,000 episodes of television. And he basically was one of the principal directors on Taxi. And he was one of the co-creators and directors of more than 200 episodes of Cheers.
Wow.
So he made Cheers, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he directed a lot of other things, Friends and Big Bang Theory and Two Broke Girls and Frasier and Two and a Half Men, Will and Grace, almost all of the Will and Grace episodes. Every episode of Will and Grace. The pilot for Friends.
Wow.
So, you know, the one that got him the contract. So, not a small influence in the world of TV. 11 Emmys and 5 Directors Guild Awards, put in the Television Hall of Fame back in 2006. So, you know, certainly did a lot of things. I've seen a lot of your TV, sir. And generally speaking, I have to say, it was pretty fantastic. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I don't have time to do that. This is just kind of a be noted kind of story. You know, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. It could get, you know, the Trump administration canceled, but they get canceled 84 times before you wake up on a Monday anyway. The federal government last week asked a judge to, oh, sorry, not 2 weeks ago, excuse me, asked a judge to halt the United States' first reparations program that offered people in Evanston, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, $25,000 if they could demonstrate a connection to 20th century race-based housing discrimination, which redlining and housing discrimination, absolutely a real thing that absolutely did harm people and was definitely used to keep blacks in their place and keep them from, you know, moving to other places and led to, I mean, all kinds of ills. Certainly true. Evanston launched this program in 2021, the first and only one of its kind in the United States. $20 million they voted to give to black residents, direct descendants of anybody who lived between 1919, so this is over 100 years ago, and 1969, about 60 years ago, and suffered housing discrimination because of city ordinance, policy, or practice. Residents, regardless of race, who experienced discrimination due to city's policies after 1969 also qualified, so you had to be black for pre-1969, anybody after that. They've already given away $7 million. Using revenue from local taxes, marijuana sales, hundreds of people, $25,000 increment. And the Department of Justice has now called this racially discriminatory because, you know, got to be black to get it. You know, not allowed to get it if you're white. Other places you might have heard have tried doing things like this or kind of gotten started. California has been debating this for a while. New York, Maryland, a dozen cities, Boston, Detroit, Philadelphia have created task forces or commissions or study groups or, you know, tambourine parties, whatever, to try to make this happen. But only Evanston is the only one who actually has managed to give out money in connection with it, and now the Department of Justice has come against them for it. 437-1620. So just kind of odd. You know, I'm not a fan of reparations. I think the idea is usually misguided. I also recognize that historical injustices have been done, and how to fix that? Is there a statute of limitations? Who's responsible for it? Who should pay? Who should you compensate? Those are all thorny questions. But I will also say, as a believer in local government, if the city of Evanston wants to, you know, engage in racism and pay people, other than the racism part, that's actually their prerogative.
Local news.